Where to stash your cash in 2016? I used a quote at the top of this section from Will Rogers. I'm not so much concerned with the return on capital as I am with the return of capital. And that's a very appropriate thought for our current environment. As I said, I've been getting more and more questions from all sides, clients, subscribers, and personal friends. And what I've found is that there's not a, or there's a surprising absence of clear thinking and organization about cash and cash management. So I wanted to create a framework for how to approach cash and cash management and go through the most important principles. When you dive down into projects, particular financial products and options, it can get very complex very quickly, particularly if you're focused on securities. And we don't need to get into that level of detail. What we first need is a framework and an approach, which is really going to help you come up with something that is just for you. As I said, and you've heard me say many times, you are unique. Your situation is unique. Your needs are unique. Be very careful of one solution fits all or generic advice that you get, radio shows, internet, all that sort of things. The theme in the first quarter wrap-up is designed to help you think through your particular situation and develop a strategy for what you need. Okay, now why focus on cash is where I start. There's several reasons. One is that interest rates have fallen tremendously since 1980. We've been in a long-term bull market for bonds, and that is coming to an end one way or the other. I expected rates to turn, and the Federal Reserve expected them to turn, but in fact, the market reaction to a small increase last year was so vitriolic that the Fed has now backed off, and if anything, we're going lower. Another reason is negative interest rates. We've seen Europe and the Japanese Central Bank go to negative interest rates, but more importantly, a big piece of the European and Japanese sovereign bonds go to negative interest rates. Negative interest rates upturns the business models for a world of providers in the financial system, particularly pension funds and insurance companies, and it's real trouble. In ways that we don't even begin to ever understand, we're entering unknown territory. Then currency values. You're seeing tremendous swings between different currencies, and there's always the fear that debasement of our currency is going to cause you to lose values if you hold too much money in cash. Liquidity. There are more issues now, particularly if we get a turn in the bond market, about problems with liquidity. And then, of course, integrity of the financial system, which really breaks down into two pieces. One is the integrity of digital systems. More and more of the payment transactions run over digital systems. And, of course, those systems really have very low, if not any, integrity, which is of concern. And then also integrity of the financial institutions, government regulation and enforcement. We've just seen systemic corruption continue to grow even after the bailouts, and it's making people nervous as to who I can trust. Finally, then bail-ins. Bail-ins are the regulator's response to the intense criticism and public fury over bailouts. If you don't bail out a bank, then you have to bail it in, which essentially means the creditors, including some of the uninsured depositors, have to take a hit. That's the way it was in the good old days before we had FDIC and government deposits and bailouts. And there's a lot of misinformation about the bail-in procedures, both in Europe and the United States, proposed bail-in procedures. If you have uninsured deposits in a bank that is weak, then you've got a problem. So it's important to make sure that you have deposit insurance covering your deposits. And it's very important, even if you do that, that you are in a fundamentally sound bank. The last thing you want to do, even if you're insured, is live through a change in control or a or a government-controlled resolution. Then, of course, big issues about the integrity of credits of many of the paper that's traditionally been used for cash management if you're using securities. So integrity of sovereign bond credits, integrity of bank credits, and integrity of corporate credits. Then finally, or I shouldn't say finally because there are two more, disinformation and fear porn, and I'll stay off my soapbox here, but there is so much disinformation and fear porn, both in the major media and the internet media, and it's for a variety of reasons. Some people are just angry at the corruption. Other people are trying to scam you again, and disinformation and fear are the way to do it. But you need to be careful and approach anything having to do with your time or your money with a real clarity and coherence. And so please, please, please turn off the disinformation and fear porn. One of the reasons I deal with so many questions about cash is I'm trying to talk somebody off the wall where they've arrived having digested way too much disinformation and fear porn. Then going cashless, and this really dovetails with negative interest rates. We see more and more interest of governments trying to go to all digital systems, no real paper cash. Very dangerous because you're talking about giving complete control to the system in very uncomfortable ways, and you combine that with negative interest rates, and government will really have the tools they need to really soak up the last bit of savings that they haven't wiped out with leverage and debasement and some of these other techniques. So there are many different reasons why cash is on their radar, but all of it sending off alarm bells with people saying, okay, so how do I hold cash? How do I make sure my cash is safe? How do I get a return on my cash? So let's look at why you're holding cash. It's very important when you think about where you put cash and what you put cash in that you understand its purpose. Some cash you hold for liquidity. You need to make day-to-day transactions, whether they're local transactions that you might make in paper cash, or they're online or remote payments that you're going to need a check or a wire or some other form of deposit institution for. The second reason you hold cash is for financial stability and soundness. I divide this into sort of physical cash that you want in case the system hiccups, and then what I call a core position, which is a certain amount of cash which is held on a risk-free or as close to a risk-free basis as you can, and it's literally your rainy day reserve fund, and you can get it immediately, and there is, as I said, as little principal risk as possible. Finally, most people hold some cash as an investment position, which is you need to go to the sidelines, you're worried about currency swings, you're worried about market swings. Cash, for many reasons, can be a desirable position. There's nothing better for investment performance when blood is in the water to have cash available. So think through why you have your cash and what you need cash for, and look at it according to these very different pots, because the different pots inform different custodians. The single most important question you need to ask about cash is, who is your custodian? The custodian is the person who's really got the goods. If you've ever seen the wonderful movie Secondhand Lions, you know, the cash was in underneath the barn. They were their own custodian. So where is the cash really? And what I've discovered is many people are not clear about who the custodian is. They may be with an investment advisor or broker who has a correspondent custodian or bank, or is using a discount brokerage as a custodian. You really need to say, okay, where's my money? Where's my securities? Who is responsible to me to make sure my cash is really here? And first and foremost, in an environment where we're worried, or we need to worry about the return of our principal, we need to look at why we have the money, what its purposes are, and then say, okay, which custodians do we want? So one of our sections is called Who is a Custodian? And let me walk you through it. What you'll notice in our web and written presentation is that I have included a great deal of links. And the reason I have is I've discovered in talking with folks grappling with financial issues, including cash management, is a lot of the absence of financial literacy is just not understanding the definitions. If you learn the definitions or get comfortable with the definitions for about 100 words and a few general concepts, you can be a master of cash management. So I wanted to make it as easy as possible for you to go revisit the definition on any of the words that we use in this presentation that you might have a need for. Okay, so let's look at your options for selecting a custodian. First of all, there's you. You can hold the cash in your mattress, behind your kitchen cabinet, and in one or more home safes. We just did a great Salary report with Dan Perkins, the president of Hidden Safes, on how to buy and install a safe. I was inspired by one of the articles in Bloomberg that the sales of safes in Japan was rising dramatically as soon as negative interest rates went in. And I have two very large home safes, and I find having safes to be just a great, I can't imagine living without them now. So, and especially because if you're going to keep anything at home, boy, you better keep it fireproof. So first is you, the second is depositories. Depositories are institutions that store outside. I'm not referring to a depository institution, this is separate. You can hold their depositories all over the world, and you can hold them depending on the different arrangements with the depository according to a name or according to a number. I gave you the example in our web presentation of Das Safe in Vienna, Austria, which will take it by number instead of just by name. Some mints, which make precious metals, coins, and bars, also provide depository services. I generally discourage keeping them with anybody who is a precious metals dealer unless they're affiliated with the government. Some depositories will also let you authorize an accounting or law firm to act as your agent, and some will permit online access and communication. They vary. And it really depends on where in the world you want your depository. Do you want it close by you? Do you want it in other jurisdictions? Do you want multiple? You're going to dive in and get the particulars. But there are generally plenty of options. It doesn't make sense to use a depository if you've got enough stuff so that it's economic to pay them the ongoing fees and overhead. Depository institution. Most people in the United States hold cash in one or more depository institutions, which are banks, credit unions, savings banks, etc. You can also deposit in a safe deposit box at the depository institutions. Many of them provide that service. There are concerns about increased government regulation. You see a lot more government regulation and control of depository institutions, and that's one of the reasons that people prefer to keep storage either at home or in a separate depository outside of the regulatory system for depository institutions. Brokerage firms and broker-dealers, once you move to securities through a brokerage firm, you get a much greater, wider selection of cash and cash equivalents using securities. And in fact, in combination with a brokerage firm, you may use an asset management firm. Now, depositories institutions sometimes will have asset management or brokerage affiliates. I like to keep the two functions separate. I'm a person who likes firewalls, but you'll certainly see that fact pattern many times. Governments can also act as a custodian. For example, the US Treasury will take investment direct for government bonds, bills, notes, and savings bonds. Governments with an affiliated mint can act as a custodian for precious metals. Post offices, to the extent you use them to facilitate money orders, etc., can end up serving as a custodian for short periods of time to the extent that they're managing float. And I give the example of tax overpayments. I have a tendency of always having running tax credits with the government, which has served me very well in the past. Payment systems, if you use companies like PayPal, you can end up with a big float. We use PayPal as one of our systems for our website, and so we end up always having some significant balances in PayPal. Consumer goods companies and vendors. One of the examples I use is I always have $50 to $100 on my Starbucks card. Starbucks is one of the companies that's done very well financing with prepaid sales through payment and gift cards. You see more and more growth of payment and gift cards, and you can end up having quite a lot of cash sitting on those cards. You want to be careful because the fees and transaction costs can be highly uneconomic, particularly on the lower quality phone cards, so be careful. Another thing to do is to prepay vendors, who may be another way to stockpile cash. I've always made it a habit, to the extent possible, to pay very quickly, and I've always found that useful instead of waiting the requisite 30 days, because when trouble comes, you've built up a fair amount of goodwill. Personal network. Most people don't think of a personal network as a place to stockpile cash. I do. You've heard me tell the story many times in the Solari Report of when I got into my squabble with the federal government. It turned out I had gifted or loaned $250,000 to family and friends, and it was about that amount that sort of dribbled back to me over an 11-year period. I can't imagine what would have happened to me, but it was the one source of money that the bad guys could never shut off, and it really kept me alive. You see similar notions of keeping your money out on your personal network when you look at these different groups called circles or partnerships or hands that many of the immigrant groups do in North America. They meet regularly. It's like a savings club. Everybody determine an amount. That's your hand. Everybody puts the amount in. Let's say the hand's $100. 12 people get together once a week or once a month. They all put $100 in the pot, and one person takes it. It's a way over many years of the float staying within your network instead of the float going to the benefit of the depository institution. That float can be pretty big, particularly when interest rates are higher. So another way to keep your savings out there on the network. I mentioned community loan funds, including CDFIs. Under personal networks, because usually those come to us through the personal networks, not so much as we go looking for a financial institution. People are comfortable with them as credits because they know a lot personally about the people running it or where the money's going. And I have found some of them to offer relatively short-term or intermediate-term options as a way to stash cash where you're really comfortable with them. And then finally, we get to the category for custodian of anonymous internet servers. Here's where I'm in danger of getting into my soapbox again. There are two fact patterns I see. One is an online bank. It's not subject to normal banking laws and regulations. It could be in an Indian reservation in North America. It could be an offshore haven. They don't describe their legal and governance structure. They don't describe their board of directors or managements. They provide little or no information about their auditors and audits. They don't have financial statements or any form of third-party verification. They don't have access to government deposit insurance. In short, they're just a complete mystery. And the notion that this is an alternative to the system. You know, someone will come to me and say, oh, well, you can't trust the banking system, so I'm going to put my money in this completely unregulated, unstructured, undisclosed thing as though it was some sort of an alternative. Please don't, you know, do not do this. If you want to put money in something like that, consider it a highly speculative investment. You'll be, you know, if you don't be surprised if you get nothing back. You're talking, even if it's a legitimate group of people trying to do a legitimate thing, they don't have the experience or the financial clout to necessarily make it through in this environment. And then, of course, there's cryptocurrencies. Again, these are fiat currencies. They don't enjoy the backing of a sovereign government. They don't enjoy deposit insurance. They're the ultimate in fiat. There's no there there. If you think there's no there there on the U.S. currency, what do you see no there there on something like Bitcoin? So as I said, they're not insured. The exchange values vary widely. So, for example, you can see the New Zealand currency swing against the U.S. currency by 50%. You can see the cryptocurrency swing even more. So you're talking about wild currency risk or exchange risk. They're not widely accepted, although for some of them, online acceptance is growing. And in fact, we've seen as Bitcoin exchanges get hacked and cryptocurrency exchanges get hacked, people can lose all their holdings overnight. So these businesses are the custodian equivalent of the Wild West. They're not cash options. They're speculative investments. If you're looking for a place to put your cash, do not put it in Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies unless you're going to use that amount of money to transact online where you transact with those currencies. Okay? Otherwise, they're speculative investments, and the risks are much, much greater than any of the other forms of cash that you're maintaining. So my advice is buyer beware. I'm not saying don't do them if you want to do them, but just understand you want to limit your commitment to the amount that you're prepared to lose 100% of, or to the amount you need to execute transactions with Bitcoin online. So in closing, let me just repeat the basic infrastructure for successful cash management is to have excellent custodians with excellent custodial relationships. And I cannot stress excellence enough. And so the next section is called Look for Excellence, and it goes through three primary steps. One is collect intelligence. Two is get recommendations. And three is personal phone calls and visits. A lot of it is distilled from our article about how to find a good local bank, which is at the Bank Intimate page on Solari, and I'm not going to walk you through these. I just think it's much easier to get intelligence than I find most people understand. There's a lot of regulatory information available in the United States. I've used United States information, but I found that there's plenty of information available in other developed markets. I also think it's always possible to get recommendations from family, friends, and trusted professionals and business people that you deal with, particularly lawyers, financial advisors, CPAs, or asset managers. And finally, I can't stress enough, it's extremely valuable to get to know people, whether you have to do it by phone or with personal visits. Part of the power of having excellent custodians is knowing them, make sure they know you. Trouble comes, mistakes happen. It's essential to communicate, and you can communicate where there's a relationship. And I think taking the time to create a relationship with a custodian where you can is very much worth your while. So take a look at the suggestions. I think you'll find them very useful for doing your due diligence on the different custodians in your life. Okay, into the heart of it, the cash management options. And we organize our discussion by the different kinds of custodians that you have, because the product offerings differ in different kinds of institutions or custodians. And so I think I think the excellence of the custodians is where you need to start. And the custodians are chosen very much according to the purpose that you need for the particular pot of cash you have. I organize the options through the custodian. So let's just walk through it. Okay, so if you're the custodian, obviously the advantage is you've got it close by, it's private, you've got it under your control, and nobody needs to know about it but you. The danger is, and there's big danger here, because in my personal experience, the greatest custodian risks I've dealt with and seen clients and family and friends deal with is when they are the custodian. They forget where they put it. They forget to tell their heirs where they put it. They forgot that they have it in the basement, and then they get the plumber to come over and $65,000 of silver walks out the door. They received it through an insecure source. They had the precious metals, mailed to a business that they shouldn't have had it. And suddenly word goes out in the network. They put it in their house. Boom, they get broken into a week later. So I generally find, if you think you can't trust the financial system, wait till you get a load of some of your neighbors. So I think you have to be, if you act as the custodian, you have to take the time to really think through how you do this and how you do this intelligently. It's one of the reasons I wanted to get Dan Perkins on and talk about the different aspects of using safes. I'm someone who always likes to have or recommend two safes, one which is obvious and one which is hidden, so that if you do get a home invasion, you can take them to the Cougar Ranch in one safe and leave the rest in the other. It's very important for whatever you do as you, the custodian, to have good records. And it's another reason to have a good safe, because if you can have records for all your holdings and keep them in a fireproof safe, I like to have them in redundant places. So a safe deposit box, a home safe, out there on a server password protected. Again, it gets very particular very fast, but you definitely want to make sure for anything you're the custodian and for all your holdings, you have great records. Okay, depository, the key is the location of the depository. How much physical space do you need? Remember, silver bars get big fast and can get very expensive. That's one of the reasons, you'll see more people tend to keep silver at home and gold in the depository. Who's going to have access to the depository, and what insurance depository can hold many things? It can hold cash. It can hold precious metals. If you use it for paper cash and you put it in a jurisdiction far away, you're going to have a problem if we go cashless, because you're going to have to go flying. You may have to go fly and figure out how to convert your cash into precious metals or something else a little bit harder. Generally, whether depository or yourself, you're looking at keeping all the different assets in physical form. Pretty much the big ones, of course, being paper cash and precious metals. I talk a little bit in this section. I think for very effective cash management, one of the things you need to think through is what are all the things you can do to reduce your need for cash in the future? Because you have to stockpile a lot less cash if you have no need for cash. So look at ways you can permanently lower your month-to-month and year-to-year overhead, including using cash to pay down debt, or investing in things that will permanently lower your overhead. I always tell the story of the person complaining about their falling yields at the same time they were complaining about their rising water bills. The resolution was very simple: sell some securities and invest your money in building wealth. So when you look at keeping hard cash in a, whether yourself or in a depository, whether in currency, fiat currency, or precious metals, take a look at what can you do to permanently reduce your need for cash in the future, and that will give a lot more power to your stockpile. Okay, banks. The reason to hold things in banks, obviously, is the liquidity, but also I like to spread things around, and banks are, and credit unions and depository institutions are an attractive place vis-a-vis the brokerage system. I think the brokerage system has a lot of potential for hiccups that the banking system can avoid, although the more they become affiliated with each other, the more the hiccups bleed over. I like to have a bank that doesn't have proprietary trading and derivatives for obvious reasons. You can hold a significant amount in bank deposits if you're in a jurisdiction with sovereign deposit insurance, which let me use the US's example. In the US, you have $250,000 per depositor per insured bank per ownership category, which means if you spread your money between various ownership categories in terms of types of accounts and different banks, you can add up a fair amount on, insured deposits. In addition, you can do broker deposits generally through, I prefer a FINRA-regulated brokerage firm. And between broker deposits and different banks, you can run up quite a lot of deposit insurance. If you hold money in a jurisdiction where you're not a resident, you need to be clear about whether that jurisdiction covers non-residents with sovereign insurance. There's some jurisdictions that don't. Anyway, but every country is different. Generally, in the developed world and some in the developing world, there is sovereign deposit insurance. So banks, basically try to make sure you have a reserve or core position in a bank or credit union, at least one or more banks or credit union. Don't keep everything in the brokerage firm, is my two cents. Brokerage firms are where you get the most selection of cash management options. What you discover is that for cash management, cash or cash equivalents, most of those options relate to very high quality securities. So they're going to be either sovereign government bills, notes, bonds. They're going to be state, county, and municipality securities that are very have very strong ratings or have bond insurance, or extremely high corporate credits. And the government includes some intergovernmental as well. Some financial institutions and large not-for-profits can have strong credits or can do so when they have letter of credits or insurance. But you're basically talking about extremely strong credits for which they're not going to be liquidity concerns. You have two options. You can buy those securities directly, which is usually if you have larger cash positions, institutions will buy directly. Oftentimes, depending on size, you're going to buy them through pools. So you're going to buy them through a money market, you're going to buy them through a mutual fund, you're going to buy them through exchange traded funds. And in addition to the underlying securities being rated on credit, which you're going to want to understand, oftentimes you can see the pools also rated. There are many different issues about whether you want to buy through a pool or whether you want to buy individuals. One of the challenges when you're concerned about liquidity or quality in the bond market is the pools have additional risks. So let's say you go out and buy a 5-year treasury today. You don't have to worry that there's going to be redemption problems on your mutual fund and your manager's going to have to sell the treasury at a poor moment in terms of price. You own it, it's sitting in your account. There's no need to sell it until unless you want it, you own it till maturity. If we go to negative interest rates, a pool may be having to roll over and is going to start to feel the pain. Whereas if you own that treasury to maturity, you're not going to be subject to that kind of risk. So whether it's redemption risk or rollover risk in a period of negative interest rates, you're going to be happy to have your own security and have it out a little bit. Now the issues change the minute we start to have to worry about rising interest rates, which could also happen. But there's no doubt that there are pooled risks with funds and ETFs, with mutual funds and ETFs that you don't have if you own the securities yourself. If you do own the securities yourself, you've got all sorts of issues in terms of buying them the logistics of buying them individually and then either monitoring them or have an investment advisor monitoring them. And I walk through some of those in the description under brokerage firm in our written presentation. But I think what you want to understand when you get into a brokerage situation is when you're looking at cash and cash equivalent, you want to focus in this environment on extremely high quality of the underlying securities. If you're not buying the securities directly, you want to make sure, in addition to extremely high quality on the underlying securities, that you're getting very high quality in the mutual funds, the ETFs and the pools that you buy, or the investment advisor that you use. And again, if you use an investment advisor, you want to make sure you know who is the custodian, and not just who their broker is, but who their broker's broker is. You want to follow the trail. Okay, government depends on what governments offer, depending on what you're interested in. If you're in the United States and you want to do treasuries, you can do Treasury Direct online is a way you can do a wide selection of treasury securities. And as I said, some government mints sell coins and may offer custodian services, and that includes the U.S. Mint, the RBC Mint, and the Perth Mint. Consumer goods companies and vendors depends on what you're up to and what you're doing there. Again, you want to stick with people that you use and people that you trust. Personal networks, it goes back to your personal networks. I've seen many parents and grandparents transfer funds to kids and grandkids where it pays for educations, it pays for first-time homes. It pays for many, many things. And they literally would rather get the money into their kids and grandkids' hands now rather than be responsible for it in a corrupt financial system. And personal loans to family and friends works as well, although, again, I've had real problems with the corruption of untrustworthy family members watching that happen in my client base. So you need to be careful. One of the most gratifying examples, and I describe in the written presentation, is a church in Norfolk, Virginia, that decided it was going to get the whole congregation out of debt, and they would literally go around, counsel families, and then the congregation would pull up a tithe and extinguish the debt of a family, and they just kept going around the congregation until they got everybody out of debt. It's an extraordinary story. What a great way to have all your money out in your personal network. I keep warning people, though, beware the deterioration of ethics. It's not just in the financial institutions. Unfortunately, it's in our personal network. So, and I also tell the story. I had a great moment during the financial crisis in 2008. I was talking with somebody who was going to buy a Swiss sovereign bond, and then I asked them if they'd bought it a week later, and they said, well, it turned out that they were trading at a negative interest rate. So I took all the money, I put it in Kiva.org, and made interest-free loans to entrepreneurs throughout the emerging and frontier markets. I figure they'll give me my money back, and interest-free is better than negative interest. I thought that was an interesting comment on the financial system. And finally, as you know, on anonymous servers, I think your real option is if you want to prototype and learn a system like Bitcoin, it's a useful thing to learn. As many of my allies say, look, this is where things are going to go. Yes, I believe it is, but don't put any money in there greater than what you need to transact, where you're going to buy, or what you're prepared to lose in total, because when a Bitcoin exchange gets hacked, you may lose it. Okay, so to recap, there are unbelievable number of options. And when you drill down into a brokerage firm, particularly on the securities options, we could talk about this for thousands of hours. I think it's really important, though, before you get into the details of what the product offerings are with securities or particular kinds of accounts in a financial institution, you want to be really clear about your framework of excellence in custodian and excellence in credit quality in this environment, and go from there. Okay, what if? Some of the what ifs I want you to think about are listed in our transcript. I want you to think about negative interest rates. I want you to think about redemptions and runs on both money market funds, banks and ETFs, as well as mutual funds. My biggest concern here, I'm not concerned about banks if they have FDIC insurance. I mean, essentially, I see no indication why the political powers that be should pull the rug out from under deposit insurance. So, or at least for the foreseeable future that I can imagine. What I am concerned about is that the ETF industry is young. It's grown very, very quickly. It operates without a lot of protections because that's how it offers lower expenses. It's liquid while things are working fine. It's untested in periods when liquidity seizes up. And you just don't have the management you do for mutual funds, particularly if you have a seasoned mutual fund with seasoned management at a seasoned sponsor. So, I would be one of the things I try and do is limit the total amount or percentage of ETFs in a portfolio. And again, if you're using ETFs for cash management, which you may do because you're not putting enough money in to buy an individual security, I would make sure that you are with the strongest sponsors and the most liquid ETFs, and the underlying securities absolutely have to be the most creditworthy. So you want to be careful about that. The regulators have changed the rules on money market funds so that a money market could more easily handle marking to market and at a non-par price. And so another area where we could see real runs is in the money market funds. So you want to make sure, again, you're with a super custodian, and to the extent that you can be in an all treasury or all government money market with very high credit quality, you want to do it. Another thing to be concerned about is what happens if the euro fails. I think this is certainly unlikely to happen this year. If it does happen, it will be painful for the global economy. Some new energy for the US dollar market share for the time being. Don't assume that gold and silver will do well in this environment because Europe is Asia's number one customer, and what that means is we could see China and India have to start or become net sellers of gold and silver, so be careful. Governments go cashless. If you're a saver, this is a real concern. And particularly if you combine it in negative interest rates, it's a way of really targeting and scarfing up the last savers. It's going to force investors, in theory, into hard assets or the equity markets looking for a way to get out of cash. Now, I, for one, like cash for all the reasons we've discussed. And so, the possibility that governments go cashless is another reason you want to do everything to permanently lower your overhead and need for cash, whether it's retiring debt or lowering your overhead by supplying your own food, supplying your own energy, anything that's energizing for you. Don't commit to a world or lowering overhead in a way that isn't comfortable and doesn't make sense for you. But I think we want to absolutely reduce the need for cash because if government does this, it's really going to put the saver in the corner. I hear a lot about people worried about my government. I'm worried that my government goes bankrupt. If your government borrows money in a fiat currency that can print out of thin air, it is literally impossible for your government to go bankrupt. They can always meet their obligations by printing more money. What in fact can happen, though, is your currency will debase or your government may go to war or want to have totalitarian control. It's why you're seeing all those problems in the developed markets where currency debasement is happening. So now, if you're in a government that is borrowing in dollars when it can't print dollars, then, as is true for some of the emerging markets, and it's carrying a very heavy debt load, you could face some very serious cash management risks. And you want to think through what those are, because you could be in an explosive inflation situation, something like what's going on in Venezuela. So if your government is borrowing in a currency that is other than your home currency, particularly if it has a heavy debt load, you really want to sit down and focus on the what-ifs of your cash management strategy. On yields, I showed a little bit about this year. To our shock and amazement, the bond market has significantly outperformed the equity markets, and the treasury market is significantly outperforming high yield and corporate bonds, again, to our shock and amazement. And the long treasury is doing the best of all, about the opposite of what I expected, which just goes to show you, you never know what's going to happen. You have to be prepared in this environment for anything. But I put up the trading on the ETFs, and I do find the ETFs very useful in terms of tracking what's the market's doing. And these are ETFs that we will put up. Most of them go in our money and market charts that we put up for subscribers every week. But it'll show you a little bit about where yields are now. Given the nature of this environment, do not chase yield. Do not choose your custodian who's offering you according to who's offering the best yield. I mean, first of all, yields are low, and we need to pay attention to them because every penny counts when they're this low. But you do not want to chase, if you look at the trade-off between quality of custodian and quality of credit versus yield, it's not worth chasing yield whatsoever. I want you to know what the yields are, but please, please, please do not chase yields. You need to be very discerning about the excellence of your custodian and very discerning about the excellence of the credits that are enjoying the use of your money. Okay, let's look at the next section. Please remember our final section, a couple of guidelines that I really want you to take to heart. Forgive the redundancy. I find it helpful to repeat myself. Diversification. Please do not keep your resources, including your cash, in one place. You know, be like a squirrel. Spread it around. I realize it means multiple accounts and relationships. That requires more time, more paperwork. It makes things more complicated at tax time. It is absolutely worth your time and effort. Do not put your eggs in one basket, especially when it comes to cash. So, you know, I have known and met people who had everything but $5 in their wallet in Madoff, and it all left. They had mortgaged their home so they could have even more money to put into Madoff. So they had no home. They had $5 all gone. They had their money in one place. Please don't do that. I don't care how, you know, I don't care if you have a chance to leave everything at the church, at the Bank of England. Don't do it. I don't care how perfect and wonderful the place is. Diversification, spread it around. No privacy. Privacy is important. I want you to strive to achieve it. Please understand that the system at this point, you should assume in the worst case, you have absolutely no privacy. Your private financial statements are accessible by the governmental data beast and integrated and spread around defense contractors. Just assume that you've been compromised. So, there are many different things you can do to protect your privacy, and I recommend some of them here, but you need to assume that in the worst case, there is no privacy. Please do not allow anyone to get leverage over you because you've broken the law or engaged in an illegal or unethical activity and think you can keep that under lock and key in your home safe. It's not going to work. I said it before, I'm going to say it again, seek excellence. You need to seek excellence in all the custodians, the underlying credits, any brokers, investment advisors, or bankers that you do business with. Please do not compromise on the quality of your relationships and custodians to get yield. Don't chase yield. You need to make sure there's nothing that protects you like the excellence of the people that you do business with. And in this environment, you need that. You need to also make sure that their integrity is not only excellent, but they're on solid ground financially for this or that reason. Intellectual mastery. There is no reason, I don't care how bad you think you are with money and finance, there's absolutely no reason why you can't have intellectual mastery of any issues related to your cash management or finances. Cash in particular, although if you get into securities, the your options can get pretty complicated and many, but don't get drowned by that complexity. If you don't understand something's wrong and you're not the thing that's wrong, don't feel rushed, don't feel pressured. Make sure financial providers take the time to explain things to you. And again, one of the reasons I put up all the links is, particularly now with Wikipedia, which is an absolutely sensational resource, it's relatively easy to troll around and get familiar with the different terms and definitions and get intellectual mastery of them. This is really a matter of learning 100 words well and a few concepts. And if you get those basic concepts and terms right, you can have intellectual mastery. The more you have intellectual mastery, you're going to be the more comfortable you are. If you know what you hold cash for and why you hold it, and then why you hold it, where you hold it, and you have excellent custodians, you're going to sleep well at night. And of course, that is one of the goals. Build relationships. Things go wrong. People make mistakes. Stuff happens. You want to be relating on your cash management with people who you know, they know you. It's all part of best practices. And particularly if you're in a jurisdiction in the developed world that has all these new and growing ridiculous laws relating to financial risk and repression. So personal relationships can help a lot. Redundant archives. Archive, archive, archive. I always say, he who archives writes history. I cannot tell you, people who have been in a disaster, when they have all their legal documents, contracts, and financial statements, they come back right up. Their insurance companies jump and get them what they need. Other people help them because they've got the documentation. So you want to make sure you have redundant copies of everything and all your holdings. You want to have them in multiple locations, and you definitely want to make sure at least one of those is fireproof. Finally, and to underscore where we started, you are unique. Every person is different. Your needs, your approach to asset management and risk management, your goals, your situation are unique. You do not fit in a box and you cannot be standardized. Do not accept advice from people who don't understand the specifics of your situation or imply that one size fits all. This presentation has not been designed to tell you what to do in your cash management. It's designed to tell you how to figure out what you should do. So it's a tool to help you build a framework and understand the most important rules and principles so that you can dive in and figure out where you want to put your money. And then if it's at a brokerage account, okay, how do I think through, how I should organize these different selections, whether it's money market funds, mutual funds, ETFs, or the individual securities. So, the best approach to your cash management is you take responsibility to understand what you need and insist that all the people that you're working with or are helping you help you master your financial affairs. So I always say you're the chairman of the board overseeing your money, and whatever happens to your money, you're responsible for the consequences. You're going to live with consequences. So I don't care if you have, $100 million in your cash management position or you have $5. You're special, and I hope you take the time to work out a way of going about this that really works for you. And as I said, I see, it's funny, working with lots of different people over many different years, I see wide variation in what makes sense for people. So, you really are special. And if you're a Salieri Report special, if you're a Salieri Report subscriber, you're certainly special, and you're certainly special to me. So, needless to say, I believe you can and will do a great job. So, on your cash management strategy for 2016, some useful background on where to stash your cash. And again, I wish you good hunting.